Peterson arrived 5 minutes later. He spoke to his people, and then he found Janet Salter and told her he was borrowing Reacher for a quarter of an hour. He looked her in the eye and promised her that none of his officers would leave the house until Reacher was back. She was uneasy, but she seemed to believe him. Reacher put his coat on and climbed into Peterson's car, and 5 minutes after that he was back in the squad room. Peterson sat down at a desk with a computer and started pointing and clicking and pursing his lips and inhaling and exhaling. He came up with a blank gray square in the middle of the screen. The square had a play arrow laid over its center portion.
"Surveillance video," Peterson said, "from the prison interview room. It's digital. They email it to us."
"Okay."
"It's the biker and his lawyer, earlier this afternoon. We never canceled the surveillance. You know why?"
"Why?"
"Inefficiency."
Peterson moved the mouse and clicked on the play arrow. The gray square changed to a grainy color picture of the interview room shot from above. The camera was presumably hidden in a light fixture on the lawyer's side of the glass partition. It showed a man in a gray suit sitting forward in his chair with his elbows on the concrete counter and his face a foot from the glass. Opposite him on the other side of the barrier was a guy in an orange jumpsuit. He was tall and solidly built. He had long black hair and a graying beard. His pose mirrored his lawyer's. Elbows on the counter, face a foot from the glass. Conspiratorial.
"Now listen," Peterson said.
The lawyer said something in a whisper. Reacher couldn't hear it.
"Where's the mic?" he asked. "In the light with the camera."
Peterson stabbed a key, and the computer beeped the volume all the way up. Then he dragged a red dot backward a fraction, and the segment played again. Reacher craned closer. The audio quality was very poor, but this time the lawyer's sentence was at least intelligible. The lawyer had said, "You know, the ancient Greeks tell us that a 6-hour wait solves all our problems." Peterson paused the replay.
"Ancient Greeks, right? Like ancient Greek philosophers? You said Plato was an ancient Greek philosopher. It's a code. It's a message."
Reacher nodded.
"When was this?"
2:00 this afternoon. So a 6-hour wait would take us to 8:00. It's 6:00 now, which gives them 2 more hours. They've already wasted 2/3 of their time.
Reacher stared at the screen.
"Play it again." Peterson dragged the red dot back, hit play. The lawyer's head moving forward an inch, the scratchy, whispery sound. "The ancient Greeks tell us that a 6-hour wait solves all our problems."
Reacher said,
"I don't hear it that way. He's not saying we have a 6-hour period during which, at some random point, all our problems might be solved. I think he's saying that 6 hours from then, something specific is going to happen in order to solve them."
"You think?"
"Just my opinion."
"What kind of thing will happen?"
"The siren will sound. It's their only way to get at Mrs. Salter."
"How can a lawyer make the siren sound?"
"He can't, but maybe they can together."
"How?"
"What happens up there at 8:00? Are they eating?" "Feeding time at the zoo is always a good time for a riot."
"They eat earlier."
"TV time? An argument about CBS or NBC?
"You said another riot wouldn't happen."
"Something is going to happen. That lawyer is talking about a future event with a fairly high degree of confidence."
Peterson went pale, papery white under his reddened winter skin.
"Jesus," he said. 8:00 is head count time. They locked them in their cells for the night and checked them off. Suppose that guy got out this afternoon and they don't know it yet. They're going to be one short. 1:01, they're going to hit the panic button." They drove straight back to Janet Salter's house. Dinner was almost ready, about 10 minutes away. Spaghetti and sauce and cheese, with salad in the old wooden bowl. Janet Salter offered to set an extra place for Peterson,
Peterson said yes, but nothing more. He just accepted the invitation and then stepped away from the kitchen activity and took Reacher by the elbow and dragged him into the parlor. He said, "I'm staying right here when the siren goes off." Reacher said, "Good. Two are better than one. Always." "Are you armed?" "Yes, and so is Mrs. Salter." "How will their guy arrive?"
"From the front, in a car. Too cold for anything else."
"Anything we can do ahead of time?"
"No."
"We could warn the prison, I suppose. If the siren went off right now, their guy might be out of position."
"We don't want him out of position," Reacher said. "We want him walking up the driveway at 8:02, exactly when and where we expect him. You said it yourself. We need this thing to be over."
1,700 miles south, Plato came out of his house and found the three idling Range Rovers parked in a neat nose-to-tail line. The six men that had come with them were standing easy in pairs, heads up, sunglasses on, hands clasped behind their backs. Plato looked at them carefully. He knew them. He had used them before. They were solid but unspectacular performers, competent but uninspired, not the best in the world. Second-rate, B students adequate. There were a lot of words with which to describe them. He looked at the trucks, three of them all identical, British, each the cost of a college education. Maybe not Harvard. He counted them from the front, 1, 2, 3. Then from the back, 3, 2, 1. He had to choose. He never occupied the same relative position in a convoy 2 times in a row. Too predictable. Too dangerous. He wanted a 2 in 3 chance of surviving the first incoming round, if there was to be one. He figured a second round would miss. The supercharged engines had great acceleration. Better than turbocharged. No lag. He chose car number 3. A double bluff, in a way. Slightly counterintuitive. If number 1 or number 2 was blown up, number 3 might get trapped by the flaming wreckage. He would be expected to expect that. He would be presumed to be in car number 1 for that very reason, which burnished his 2 in 3 chances a little. Convoys opened up at speed. Rack and pinion steering, fast reactions. Number 3's driver could swerve with plenty of time to spare. He inclined his head toward the 3rd car. One of the men standing next to it stepped up smartly and opened the rear door. Plato climbed in. There was a step, which was necessary, given his stature. He got settled on the rear seat. Cream leather, piped with black. An armrest on the door to his right, an armrest pulled down in the center of the bench. Air conditioning set low, very comfortable. The 2 men climbed into the front. Doors closed. A forward gear was engaged. The convoy moved off. The gate was grinding back as they approached it. They slowed, slipped through, sped up. They cruised through the first dusty mile. Plato looked at the men in front of him. Many words to describe them. The best was disposable.